Hello, welcome back to another episode of the NFL in Review. It is week 9 of the NFL season, closing in on a halfway point now in the NFL. And it's been a fun year to this point. Lots of teams making moves, lots of teams moving up in the rankings more than others that I definitely didn't see coming. And we'll get into all that. First off, Connor, welcome back. I don't think you need introductions. It's always welcome, but you're a steady figure here now. So how we doing, man?
Doing good, man. Week after the deadline in the NFL, you get to see some new faces and some new jerseys. Really, really get an opportunity to see what teams are really starting to shape up to be at this point in the year. What injuries might propel, teams to, have tough times the rest of the way and, who the real contenders are. So definitely a fun part of the year.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Definitely a fun part of the year. The week after, the trade deadline, to see how people do right away, immediate impacts, is always fun. There's not so many because you guys still got to learn the playbook and stuff, but it's fun to see some new guys around. And one guy that's missing in Jacksonville is James Robinson, who got traded to the Jets. And one thing that's not missing, what might be missing, is the Raiders' offense. That hasn't been found in a very long time. And you know what? We said it last week, the Raiders are done. But if this was the nail in the coffin, then it's the nail in the coffin right now. You had a 17-point lead against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And were they at home?
It was...
They better not be home.
They were. Yeah, it was in Jacksonville.
Okay, good. It was in Jacksonville. No excuse still. No excuse. Jacksonville is a decent team. It's a decently, more than what people expected that from them offensively so far. But you got to win these games when you have a lead with the stars on your team that you're supposed to, pick up and really carry your team to victory. And they just didn't do that once again.
Yeah. Jacksonville, we've seen as a team this year, just can't close games. They're terrible in the fourth quarter. They're young and inexperienced, and they don't know how to win games. That being said, for the Raiders to allow the Jaguars to come back from 17 down and hang on to a game, finally, is, like you said it perfectly, it's the nail in the coffin. The Raiders, they're done at this point. They sit at 2-6. ETN ran all over them in the second half. And, pretty much all game, but...
Yeah, all game.
This is a game that you just couldn't afford to lose. When you go up 17, Jacksonville is not that good. The quarterback is not that good right now in Jacksonville. And if you're Derek Carr, you have to find a way to pull this out, whether, you have a rough third quarter and it's closer going into the fourth or whatever the case may be. If you're the franchise QB that, some people think Derek Carr is, you have to pull this one out.
Yeah, and we've seen it. Couple weeks now, at least two of the last 3 weeks, where these Raiders have had a lead in the first half, or they've looked well enough, and then in the second half, they just completely go silent. They stale out, and they do nothing. And once again, it's case in point. And I got to point fingers at Derek Carr, because he's the quarterback of this team, who they've stuck with for years and years now at this point. And they just can't move the football anymore. They look so different in certain games in the first quarter. And it push comes to shove where they have to make a big play. They have to get a big first down. They can't do it. They can't get themselves in situations to win games. The times they do, their other team will mess up or they won't capitalize. And they can take what's there for them, but they're not doing it to a point where they can turn their season around. And if there was ever a point to turn the season around, you basically have to just go ahead and you got to win 8. You got to go 10-6 with that division, how strong it is. And... Well, not strong, actually. It's not strong. But with how strong the AFC is and the Jets, the surging Jets, and the teams you don't expect to be where they are, the team needs to do something, and too little too late, even though it's not even anything. It's not little. It's just you saw Devontae Adams have a good game, which...
Well, in the first half. Second half, he was targeted 8 times, and he only caught 1.
Well, yeah.
So...
Yeah, that is true.
The connection just completely fell off in the second half.
Yeah. And you know what's crazy? He had 17 targets in total. It looks like a Devontae Adams or bust here in this with this team, and if they can't find a way to use other guys, and I know Darren Waller is a big loss for them, giant loss, because he's a big part of their offense, but you have other dudes that you've went to before. Hunter Renfrow's been a non-existent player for this team, and he was a big part last year, and on the Raiders' side, man, it's just there's really nothing else you can do. If you're not going to show up and play well, then... You deserve to be 2-6, and we were both wrong on what we expect from the Raiders, which I definitely didn't see.
No.
And you know what? It just good on Jacksonville pulling out a win. I mean, they're 3-6. They're, you know, not really in a position here to take any division. They're in just a stage where you pile a win if you can and just move on and try to, you know, get better each week. For the Raiders, it's win now, man, and they're not winning, and their season's basically over.
Yeah, yeah. 2-6, it's pretty much over. It's been put up or shut up for a couple of weeks, and they've shut up, so.
Yeah. Another game I want to run over to quickly here is the Seattle-Arizona game. I want to talk about Seattle for a second. Seattle coming into this season was looked at as a bottom five team in the NFL. Looked at possibly one of the worst teams, if not the worst team by some people's standards. And even my standards, I had them as a bottom three team in the league. And I got to give credit where credit's due here. Their defense has played really well for them. I don't think it's necessarily so much their offense, even though Kenneth Walker has 100% transcended this team offensively and gave them an identity. They've always been a run-first team, and it shows, and they've played really well with that. They finally used Noah Fant, who they got in the Russell Wilson trade, who I think is a very good tight end and should definitely be used more than he is, and they got him going, and the team just played a really good game. Again, people have also said about them playing on the road, they're not the same team as home, they're not the same defense at home, and they went out in Arizona with an Arizona team that's not in a good spot either, but is supposed to be better than what people think they are and what they're playing as right now, and they took care of a decent team. They did well.
Yeah, 14-10 in the third quarter, Arizona. Seattle just completely controlled the whole second half. You know, a garbage time touchdown to make it a little bit close. You know, midway through the fourth for the Cardinals, you know, made it a little bit interesting. But it was just a full second half, pretty much dominating performance from Seattle against a division opponent. I'm a little worried about the Cardinals at this point. Their offense doesn't look extremely explosive. Kyler does not completely look into it. You see flashes, and, you know, the overall numbers at the end of games still look pretty good. But watching the games, you don't really see the flashy, you know, greatness that we've seen from Kyler at times. He had a huge fumble at the end of the first half when Arizona had a chance to, you know, extend an early lead. And, you know, like you said, for Seattle, I mean, you know, they have been better than anyone expected them to be. Obviously, you know, Kenneth Walker has been, you know, a really good surprise for them. But, I mean, the biggest surprise has been Geno. He did throw a pick in this game. But, I mean, just overall, what he's been able to do with, you know, with this group of receivers and with the expectations coming into the year, I mean, there was talks that it should have been Drew Locke over him to start the year. And, you know, now look at, you know, they're leading the division. They have a pretty nice lead in the division, for that matter. And they knock off a, you know, a pretty nice win against a divisional opponent. That's reeling a little bit right now. So a really good win for Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, 26 for 34, 275, two touchdowns, a rating of 106.9. And for me, man, Geno just, like we said it week in and week out, he doesn't make the big mistakes. He's making the right throws. He's making really good throws. And, you know, we haven't seen a full season of Geno in such a long time because he's just been kind of a journeyman around the league recently. And he gets the time to really make a mark with a team. He's got some good weapons like Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf are good pieces. DK Metcalf obviously didn't have a giant game but scored a touchdown. But he spreads the wealth around, everyone get involved, and they look like a team, which I can't believe I'm saying it, but that can go and compete and win that division. I know San Francisco got their pieces. They go with trade for Christian McCaffrey, and they're obviously the second team in that division right now that people, I'm sure, assume that they're going to overtake the Seahawks. But Seattle, just they play kind of a similar game than like the San Francisco 49ers with their running. They rely on their defense a lot, run getting to the quarterback, and Kyler got sacked five times, which you don't see much from Kyler. You don't really see him taking sacks because of how elusive he is getting out of the way and being able to avoid and evade people. But good win from Seattle, and they move on to next week, and I think they play. Do they play another divisional game next week? I'm not sure. No, they play the Buccaneers next week. And we already know the thoughts about them. So we're going to move on from Seattle. But all in all, man, great win from Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. In Arizona, which definitely, when they need a win probably more than anyone right now, which their expectations the last 2 years would get D-Hop back and all that, was a good win for them. And I think we should start talking about Cliff Kingsbury as well.
I think that's a very viable point. You're 3-6, and this team had a lot higher expectations than that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move over on to the Green Bay game. Green Bay-Detroit, interesting game. Not one you saw a 15-9 score. I didn't think a 15-9 score would be the one to put the nail in the coffin for this team. But it's time, man. Green Bay, again, we've given them a lot of leeway. I at least myself has given them a lot of leeway to really figure it out because it's Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur's been good for them. But Aaron Rodgers looked bad. The team looked bad. He threw three picks for the first time, I think, in like 3 years or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And if they're not going to run the rock, they don't have anything offensively outside the numbers to really get this team going. I think they're in deep trouble, and I don't know what they really do from here as a team at all.
Yeah, they are in deep trouble. Aaron Rodgers was really bad. Don't see a ton of performances like this out of a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Jones, it seems like he's getting nicked up pretty much every Sunday right now, which is, you know, obviously not good for them. He's the best weapon on their offense. And, I mean, there is major concerns in Green Bay right now. I mean, they couldn't move the ball. You know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't look like Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, with the, you know, limited weapons that he does have, you need to be Aaron Rodgers on a week-to-week basis to make things happen. Robbie Dobbs, you know, went out early with an ankle injury. In this game, it looks like he's going to miss, you know, a couple of weeks. An ankle injury. So now you're even down another guy that was kind of, you know, moving in, you know, a little bit more into the trust circle for Rodgers. I don't think this is an extremely impressive win for Detroit. So I don't really, you know, feel the need to talk about, you know, much on their end. But it is a little bit worrisome for Green Bay. There was a couple things, you know, that Rodgers said, you know, after the game, you know, talking about, you know, they have two home games coming up. And, you know, if they do win those two home games, if they are able to win those two home games, one being this week, you know, against the Cowboys, then the season looks a lot different. And it does. You know,
absolutely does.
5-6, you know, is a lot different than 3-6. You're back in the hunt. And with Aaron Rodgers, anything can happen. But we're 2 weeks away from it looking a whole lot different. And right now it looks bleak.
Yeah, difference in a great way and a bad way. There's two ways this thing can go. And there's ways that can send one person to a retirement home, or there's another one that can send him back, you know, back in the thing of things. You get a playoff mojo going. But is this more, do you think, more of roster construction and how they left this roster going into the season, expecting, you know, obviously you're an Aaron Rodgers-led team for the Green Bay Packers. You expect to be in the playoffs every single year. Was this more of, let's, you know, hey, Aaron, if you're so good, you know, you want this money and you want to stay here, let's go see what you can do with these guys. Is that one of those things you think, or is it more of like, well, I'm trying to think of the word for it. Do you think it's more roster construction or more, I would say, coaching / just strictly Aaron Rodgers' performance, not being the uplift these young guys?
I think it's a little bit of both. More roster construction, though. I mean, when you have some of the talent that Green Bay has, you should be putting all of your, you know, all of your chips into the middle of the table, you know, to try and make it happen. You know, Rodgers is coming towards the end here, and this, you know, for all we know, this could be their best chance in the next, you know, how many years to get, you know, as close as they can to a Super Bowl, and they should have been putting, you know, all their ducks in a row and doing everything that they can to get there. And if you just look at the weapons that he has, it's just exemplary of not doing everything that you can do. And obviously, you know, we did hear, you know, some of this, you know, rumors that there were a couple of guys that, you know, they talked to about, you know, getting at the deadline that didn't work out. But this is about the offseason. You can't even come into the year with this. I mean, this was a conversation at the beginning of the year. What were the weapons going to look like without Devontae?
Yeah, it's still the same thing.
And we're still, talking about here. And, you know, coaching, you know, as well a little bit. You talked about how they, you know, don't really run the ball with any, you know, effectiveness. And that's a big part of what they've been able to do the last couple of years with, you know, Aaron Jones. I mean, Aaron Jones is a stud. And, you know, A.J. Dillon in prior years has had a lot, you know, bigger of a role in this offense. It seems like right now, unless Aaron Jones is, you know, on the sideline with you know, being nicked up, it seems like A.J. Dillon isn't even touching the football at all. And that wasn't the case the last 2 years. He was a big part of the running game. And they were both really good. They both don't look as, you know, explosive, you know, and Jones is nicked up, so hopefully he can get healthy. But you're right. They haven't run the ball with any effectiveness, and that hurts any passing game. And it's just, it's a little bit of a fire shoot there right now.
I think they're trying to do what they can't really do. Right now, it's hard for teams to switch up their philosophy and how they run their team. But right now, with how it's constructed and the guys you have out wide for you aren't, you know, other than Alan Lazard, who isn't some, you know, superstar.
No.
He's a guy that's, you know, performed pretty well this season, but he has no choice. He has to perform well. And you have a bunch of other guys, a bunch of rookies, young dudes, some guys that, you know, older guys that aren't really performing. They're just guys. And Aaron Rodgers is throwing the ball 43 times. Now, I get it. You're down. You're losing. You end up losing by 6 points. In a lot of these games that they're going down, and maybe you should try to switch up your how you run your team, become that running offense that you were doing so well efficiently last year. If that's going to be the strength of your team, is your A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones, that tandem, you got to do it. Go out and you got to find some type of offense, some type of fire. Like, I remember, I'm going to use Eagles as an example, last year, they were throwing the ball so much. You had the fans. You had people on radio hosts just calling into Philly stations and calling for Nick Sirianni to run the football. And the Eagles wouldn't run the football. They wouldn't do it. They would, any third and short, any second and long, it was just throw, throw, throw. And you'd had Jalen Hurts throwing 35, 45 times a game, and that wasn't him for the first couple weeks of the season. It wasn't him. They run the football. They become one of the best running offenses in the league last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's carried over to this season.
You gotta do what you do. What your roster dictates.
Yeah, and your roster is telling you that you have two guys and an offensive line that's not bad. It's not bad. It can be your offensive line can be better, but you have Bakhtiari that's in, like, you know, the later part of his career as well. But these guys need to utilize what they did best in years past to help out Aaron Rodgers, especially when he has nothing to go to, and run the rock more. They ran the ball 20 times. Again, they were down the game, but I can't use it as excuse. These guys have been down every week, mm-hmm. and something's not, it's not working, so you got to do something different.
Yep.
And against a Lions team that is one of the worst, it is the worst or second worst defensive running team, running defense in the entire league. And you have to take advantage of that, and they didn't do that. Packers, do or die against the Cowboys next week. I'm going to be honest with you. I think they might actually bounce back against the Cowboys, strictly because it's in Lambeau, and I don't know. You know, it might be a hostile environment. We'll see. We'll talk about that later when we give our picks that I ruined last week. So we'll get there when we get there. But I want to move on to a different game, man. I want to go over and let's go to Buffalo and the New York Jets, who pulled out a win against Buffalo at home. And their defense looked really good, man. They made Josh Allen do a lot of things that he doesn't do. Force throws, kind of try to make everything happen by himself. It was a one-man show last week. On the Bills, it was just Josh Allen trying to do too much. And you don't really see that. You see Josh Allen do a lot of good. You see him make the right plays, and those risks that he take are very good risks. And this week, he just kind of fumbled. He had two fumbles. He had two picks. He got sacked five times. A lot wrong there. And credit to the Jets, man. It's a great win.
Yeah, no, the Jets defense is for real. And I think we can say that with confidence at this point. They still have questions offensively. And they're young and up and coming, so you expect to still have questions. But their defense is for real. They really showed it this week. Josh Allen was horrible. The two interceptions were just, like, they weren't even, they were bad interceptions.
They were bad interceptions,
interceptions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they made him look pretty foolish. He had the two rushing touchdowns in the first half, and they ended up putting up 17 points. So outside of that, they didn't do anything. And if you're the Jets, your offense didn't do a ton either. You were able to put up 20. I mean, obviously a really big confidence builder for the New York Jets, you know, against a division, you know, opponent in the Bills. You know, now you're only a half a game back in that division right now. You know, you sit at 6-3 in Buffalo, you know, at 6-2. So, you know, obviously for the Jets, you got to feel good. For the Bills, I don't know if I see this as a huge concern. The biggest concern is the possible injury, that Allen comes out of this game with.
Yeah, his elbow.
Yeah, but they just didn't play a very good game. And the Jets, you know, you give them credit defensively. They made a lot of those bad things happen. I think some of them were also self-inflicted. And I think that's, you know, stuff you can clean up when you have a guy like Josh Allen. So not too concerned, but a really nice one for the Jets. It was actually pretty fun to watch how ferocious their defense was.
It's fun to watch the Jets now, man. You never say that before, and you know what? That that division, if the Jets are for real defensively, that division gets more enticing.
Yeah.
With the Bills and the Jets top of that division. I mean, the Patriots as well, but if you're going to talk the two best teams in that division right now, it's the Jets and the Bills. Obviously, the Bills are a step ahead, and I think everyone's head would still obviously agree with that. It's you lose football games. You're not going to win every game. You don't go undefeated. And you run into a team that's playing really well. Hot, got a lot of, like, you know, the guys are really playing together defensively, and you just run into one of those games. And sometimes it happens in the NFL. I think that's more of what I think of this team, of this game, was just the best team doesn't always win. And sometimes you run into a hostile environment where teams really clicking, especially one side of the ball, and they get in your head and you start forcing and things, you know, the whole unraveling happens and begins. And you gotta give credit to the Jets for sure. I'm not going to take anything away from them. They really have surprised a lot of people this year. And if they're going to keep playing like that, man, you know, they might be exciting to see come down the stretch here to make a playoff push.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very excited to see that. As for Josh Allen, and I hope he's all right. I don't think it's too bad, but we're gonna see as the days go on. I hope to see him back out there because he's an MVP caliber player. You need him out there. This league thrives off of those type of players, and he's an extremely fun watch. So hopefully he gets okay and they get back off to it next week. You want to talk Tampa Rams, man?
Yeah,
because I don't. This was just a battle of who doesn't screw up the most.
Yep.
This is exactly what we both expected of a game like this. And you know what? What do I take away from it? There was, what, 6 field goals in this game? Yeah. 7? You can start me off, man. I can't even begin to tell you where these guys stand.
Yeah. This was a slug, man. Cup had an early, you know, a second quarter touchdown. And after that, we pretty much just saw field goals until super late in the game.
5 field
goals. Neither team could run the football at all. Darrell Henderson had nothing going for, you know, the Rams and obviously Fournette and Rashad White were just anemic. Stafford didn't look great. Neither did Tom Brady. Like, it was just, honestly, you know, for two teams that were so good last year and came into this year with so many expectations, this was a real dud of a game.
I can't believe it.
I mean, you know, Tom Brady did have, you know, that late drive where there were 2 drop passes in the end zone. Scotty Miller had one. I can't recall off the top of my head who had the other one. And then the defense was able to hold up. The Rams couldn't get a first down. And, you know, we did see a little bit of Brady magic at the end, which if you're going to give Brady 2 chances with under 5 minutes to go win a football game, 99% of the time he's going to go out and do it. And he did. And so for me, this is all up to the Rams. I mean, you had a couple of breaks with the drops in the end zone. This was your game to win when it came down to it at the end. You just, all you needed was a first down, and you couldn't get it. But I don't really think this is, you know, a galvanizing win for the Buccaneers. I'm not sure if this points them in the right direction.
No.
For the Rams,
this points them in a direction to where you, I said it last week, you have to start talking Sean McVay. You have to start talking just your front office and management. Like, this team was in a Super Bowl last year. They couldn't look worse. They couldn't look any worse than what they're looking right now. I know they're 3-5. They have wins early in the year, but they look like one of the worst offenses in the entire league. It looks so bad. If Cooper Kupp wasn't on this team, they'd be 0-8.
Yeah.
There'd be nothing here. This team is pitiful, and for a Super Bowl champion, nonetheless, just getting there, this is unacceptable.
Yeah, this is more than a hangover.
Yeah, and you know what it is now? This is why in sports, right, and in game and in stuff like this, you never know when you're going to get to Super Bowl. You never know when you're going to make these runs. Teams that have a chance to do something, like for example, the Bills, obviously they're built for success. The Eagles, even the Jets, Miami, stuff like these guys that are not always there, that are on their way having really good seasons, you got to go and take care of business. You just don't know when you're going to go back there. I don't think it's so much that for the Rams because they have the profile of being a really good team. And they have good players. Not as strong. They've lost Odell. They've lost some pieces on defense. Some of the offensive line. They lost Von Miller, of course, but you still have Aaron Donald. You still have these guys that should be able to take over games where Allen Robinson could be more of a dud than they signed him.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. I don't really know. This game's a slop fest. As for the Buccaneers side, I mean, you do need this win. You absolutely need this win. You're in the first place in your division somehow. But you did. You gave Brady two chances at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And you can't do it twice. The guy's 50. He threw the ball 58 times. I mean, eventually you have to give Tom Brady 58 chances to make a play on you. He will make a play, and he did. Yeah, so
exactly.
That's all we got for it. This was just sloppy. I don't even think defense has played great. I think they just
– It was just bad
offense. Offense was just so was just pitiful. Offense. There was nothing there. And, like, no one stood out in this game other than Ryan Suckup and Matt Gay. They played great. So, yeah, you know what? I'm serious.
You laugh, but you're it's
the kickers
accurate.
Have been great. You got to give credit where no one else gives credit to the kickers, so might as well. Let's go where are we going? Let's go Minnesota, Washington. Listen, man. Again, I want you to start it off. You watched the game fully. I was just, you know, I red zoned it out. I got them all on TVs. I followed on my phone and stuff. Vikings are a 7-1 team. They won by 3 points. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about this game. I don't think a ton of people care about it in terms of Washington. It's more about the 7-1 Vikings, which is actually something to really talk about. 7-1 is a big deal. You know, for Washington, this was a game that they pretty much controlled. 17-7 in the fourth quarter with the ball. This is a game you need to win. I don't care who you're playing. If you're at home up 17-7 with the ball with about 9 minutes to go, you have to make it happen. Heinicke throws an absolutely horrible interception. He lets Kirk get the ball in the red zone, throws a touchdown to Dalvin Cook, and you just knew right when that interception was thrown that this was going to be, you know, Minnesota coming back and winning this game. It's exactly what happened. It's just a prototypical letdown, you know, from Washington. And for Minnesota, it's a big win because this really would have been a letdown win for them. I mean, a letdown loss for them.
Uh-huh.
Kirk coming back to Washington, you're 6-1. You're feeling good as a football team. And let's be honest, Washington is not that great. They're not that talented. And if you came in here and had a dud, which you did through three and a quarter quarters,
yeah,
that's a whole lot different than sitting at 7-1 right now. So really, really good job for Minnesota to make plays in the fourth quarter, get themselves back into the game, and eventually win it. For Washington, it's the same old song and dance that we talk about every year and every week, unfortunately, as Commanders fans.
Yeah, and I go here. I'm going to go Washington side from an outsider's point of view, of course, is they're going to need the running game to really help Taylor Heinicke out here. And because you say it every week that, you know, Taylor Heinicke is nothing special. He's more flashy. He's more like fun to just see him run around and stuff. Again, I don't know how much of that he was doing, how much dancing he was really having. But you got to have your guys to start moving the football on the ground. I mean, you ran the ball 28 times. You were even 28 for 28, I believe, if I could read correctly. Just about, or a little, you ran the ball twice more than you threw. But you had a lead, 17-7 in the fourth quarter. You got to close out games if you can, especially at home. I know the Vikings are a very, very good offensive team. And they did a decent job. I don't know if this was more on a Kirk Cousins didn't play great because he threw about 50% on the day, completion percentage. But I know, like, De'Aaron Payne, he can get to the quarterback. He plays really well. I know there's a couple guys on the defensive line for Washington that play well. I don't know how far out Chase Young is.
Yeah, before I let you continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Young, there's a chance he's actually going to debut this week.
Perfect.
But you do make a pretty good point. Really great opening drive for Minnesota. They got Justin Jefferson in the end zone. After that, Washington's defense really tightened up, and I think it was a little bit of both. I think there was a little bit of stalling from Minnesota's run game, and Kirk had a little bit of a hard time. But the defense for Washington is also been really good the last couple of weeks, and they put them in position to win. But continue. I just want to make a point about Chase Young, and I did want
absolutely to, absolutely. I mean, that line is where you're built, right? Yeah. That's the strength of your defense, and that if that you can get to quarterbacks, you can help out your secondary in different ways.
Yep.
And you know, Kirk Cousins did throw a pick, he was sacked twice. No fumbles from Kirk, which is, you know, you see fumbles from Kirk a lot. No fumbles today from Kirk. But I all in all, I think you held a really, really good offense to set to 20 points, and you let one slip, but they're 7-1. They're a really good team. Yeah. Good teams find ways to win no matter what the circumstances are, and it is what it is. For the Vikings side, there's nothing impressive here.
No.
They avoided something, you know, that might be major to talk about, but it looks better to be 7-1 and a win against Commanders, and that's all people care about.
At the end of the year, it doesn't matter. They're not going to look at this game and see how they want it. They're going to see that it's a win.
And that's what
matters at this point for a team that's, you know, where they are.
Yeah, now you slip it, you lose that game, people are going to talk about it. Of course, that's what you do and you're supposed to do. But, again, I think it was a good fight from Washington. I think there was nothing offensively going for him until what, at least like late. They had a couple of decent score. They had a who's Dax? Can I explain to you who's Dax? Milne. Who's that guy? I saw him score. And I had to look at my. Yeah. You know, I had to scroll through my Yahoo Fantasy. Just keep scrolling. I couldn't find his name.
Yeah, he's a young wide receiver. He's the kick returner. Doesn't get a ton of play in the receiving game, but he's actually one of Zach Wilson's friends. I think he was actually involved in the Zach Wilson and mother stuff that was going on, or the girlfriend stuff. I think he was actually involved in some of that.
Okay,
but he's pretty irrelevant in terms of the football team. He returns the kicks.
So. That's fair. That's pretty interesting. Okay. We'll continue.
You ask, I answer.
The mother stuff. That's different. That's okay. That's okay. Move on. I want to go Miami Chicago for a second here. I want to talk primarily in this game. I know Miami won the game. I want to talk about the resurgence of what we're seeing from Justin Fields. He's been playing very well. He's also been playing really well with his legs. He's starting to use his legs at a rate that we think, and I know we talked about before, that if you're going to be a running team, you gotta run the ball the most you can. Use what is in a team like this who has no expectations. Do what your team is doing best, that can do best, and that's using Justin Fields' legs. I know Dave Montgomery didn't get the, you know, and their running backs really didn't do much at all. Mm-hmm. But you saw Justin Fields look like the rookie that they wanted and they expected to really change that philosophy over there in Chicago.
Yeah, Matt Eberflus is really doing good by Justin Fields. I mean, They're not having him sit in the pocket, be a pocket passer, which he's really not.
It's not.
And letting him get smacked around because their O-line is bad. He's using what Justin Fields does well, and he's making the most out of it. And Fields is a completely different quarterback than what he was last year and even at the beginning of this year. You brought up the point about how the running game, you know, for the two running backs wasn't great. But the biggest thing to me is that they still gave it to him. Montgomery only averaged 2.6 a carry, and they still had him carry the ball 14 times. When you are a heavy run offense, even if it's not working, you have to stick with it because that's what opens up everything else. I mean, Justin Fields only threw for 123 yards, and they put up 32 points.
They put up 32 points.
So at the end of the day, no matter if it's working or if it's not, if you are still in, you know, close proximity of the game and you don't have to throw the ball to get back in, you know, if you're down by a ton of points, you have to stick with it. They have. I mean, obviously, defensively, they've been god-awful the last couple of weeks because offensively, I think they've been the best offense the last 3 weeks with New England.
The loss
in Dallas, but they put up a ton of points, and now this loss. But, I mean, obviously, you're right. We're seeing a different Justin Fields. Hopefully, this is something that we see more of, and it's not, you know, just a, you know, a one-time thing, because I do believe in Justin Fields, and I do like him, you know, as a guy.
Yeah.
And... yeah, just defensively, it's just, I mean, I know Miami's a good offense, but the last couple of weeks defensively for Chicago have been horrendous.
Yeah, it has been horrendous, and so has Miami's, to be honest. Miami's has been, and they're supposed to be better, but
I'm a little worried about
it. Yeah, Miami's a weird team. You're going to need your offense to carry them, and I know Tua's played really well, but, how, you know, you have to have him continue to play at this level, at elite level at all times, which he's not an elite quarterback, and you have to make him play elite, because you're squeaking out wins. Now, against Chicago, who's not an offensive team, by 3 points in a game where you put up 35, that's not ideal. You've squeaked out wins in the past against like the likes of, the Bills. They beat the Bills. They beat the Ravens. Again, all high-scoring games where you have to go score, and you're not stopping these teams. If this was a team where you're going to get back on track defensively against, it was going to be the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Again, it was in Chicago, so there's a little bit more there for them to really get behind their team and do whatever the fans do, because Chicago fans are crazy, especially the Bears fans are nuts, and we love them. But it really was just the Justin Fields show, man. I love watching him run around the football. It's really fun to see him grow as a quarterback. It's like he has some parts of his game that I'm sure you see people run around, but there's parts of his game where he's a little more unorthodox, a little bit more kind of all over the place, in a good way, though, a little more like just risky, and there's a lot to him that you like, and it's great steps in the right direction for him and this team, and I hope they can build on it. But like I said, for Miami's sake, you have to score 30 points a game to win games, and that's not going to sustain yourself as a 6-3 team in that division right now.
No.
When it's a stacked division and not one that we also expected. But they're 6-3. The Jets are 6-3. You have the Bills up there at 6-2. So you got to figure something out, and it's a win. But I want to see a more dominating win from this team with an offense like that with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle that continue weekly to play really, really well. And I think we have to I'm going on a tangent here, but Jalen Waddle as a rookie last year, right? People were questioning why he was like the first or second, I think, taken off the board behind like the likes of a Devontae Smith and Chase and whatever. Not Chase. Was it Chase? Not Chase last year.
No. Who am I thinking of?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
doesn't matter. But Jalen Waddle wasn't the most talked about receiver in the room for a lot of these teams and a lot of NFL GMs going into this season. And he has really, really solidified himself as a very good receiver. And one that's like looking like a Tyreek A, Tyreek B of how he plays football. They both play the same. They're both fast. And that team is wise on speed. They have a lot of speed on this team. And I think that's one identity of that team. I know throwing the ball 30 times that isn't a lot. And Tua played really well. 21 for 30, 3 touchdowns, 300-something yards. A rating of 135. So he played really well, and it's a good game for them to win, but I don't know how much you can win like that each week.
Yeah,
so.
And to your point, you were right. Jamar Chase taking fifth in 2021, Waddle taking sixth.
Yeah, so just I don't think people expected Waddle to be up there. That's basically what I'm trying to say, and he was right below Jamar Chase. So, and he's played probably out of that draft class just under Jamar Chase, I would think.
Yeah.
Like the best.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it fits his draft order. Excuse me, but kind of surprising.
Micah Parsons was in that draft, but.
Well, yeah.
Wide receiver wise, of course.
And, all right, that's something. Real quick, I want to talk about the last team in this AFC East division, the New England Patriots. This isn't really a big talking point for me in this game at all. They beat down on a bad Colts team that don't have a quarterback right now, and I did catch Ellinger played today, and he looks terrible.
Yeah.
He's not ready for NFL play at all. I mean, Bill Belichick ran circles around this team. You got your guy, or my guy, Frank Reich. He's fired. He's out of there now. They bring in Jeff Saturday, which right off the desk, he's writing papers, writing articles, and he just hops right onto the, puts the headset on. He's ready to go. And you want to talk about that for a little bit, man? Because again, for me, I think he'll start Matt Ryan. That's the first thing he's going to do because this team needs to do something. They're built for the now, and that's the scary thing with this team. They're not really built for the long-term future because they have Stephon Gilmore. They have Shaq Leonard, who they signed for a while, defensively only. DeForest Buckner, who's older as well.
Yeah.
Quiddy Pay's a good guy. Unique Ngakoue, he's older as well. Like, this team is built for now. Roddy McLeod, and they're not winning, and this is all on their offense. Of course, you have John Taylor banged up a little bit. But I'm interested to see what Jeff Saturday does to get this team hopefully in the right direction, and they need to do it immediately.
Yeah, the guy's got absolutely no experience. I think for me, I think this came down to, you know, the owner Jim Irsay and Frank Reich having some differences on, you know, the quarterback situation. I think at the end of the day, Frank Reich wanted to come into the year with Carson Wentz, and I think Irsay at the end of the year, with how the year ended with Carson Wentz there, he was done with him. He wanted to move on. I think there was a little bit of a disagreement there, and I think at the end of the day, especially if the Colts are, you know, not going to be good the rest of the year, which it doesn't look like they're going to be with the quarterback situation, you know, I feel like Jim Irsay kind of just said to himself, well, all right, well, at this point, let me put somebody in there that I like, you know, that I like being around, that, you know, I trust, and, you know, we'll see what happens. Jeff Saturday has absolutely no coaching experience, coached in high school.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, no experience. So we'll see. Definitely a strange hire, but again, like I said, I think it's just kind of like, you know, hiring a guy he likes to finish off the season with. I don't really see this being a long-term thing for them. But definitely an interesting thing, and definitely, you know, something that we needed to touch on.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to point out, Sam Ellinger got sacked 9 times in this game.
Yep.
The Patriots, they took care of a team that they absolutely ran all over. And they're 5-4 as well. They're also fighting for a playoff spot. And I think a lot of us saw this team taking a couple leaps and strides in the offseason. I don't know. You know, they Ramondre Stevenson, they've really found a guy that's going to be their next, who is it? James White. He's going to be the next James White of this team, and he's very exciting to watch play a little bit. But as for, you know, the rest of the season, they got a lot of division games coming up. I believe that this team, if I'm going to go real quick and look at the Patriots, I don't know who they've played in the division really, other than I think they played one game against the Bills.
They played the Jets.
The Jets. They played one game. So they got, they played the Jets again, the Bills and the Dolphins again. So those are all giant wins. A couple of them on Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. These are going to be really tough games for them. I don't know, man. It's tough to not see Bill Belichick in there after, you know, you don't see him, you see him out of there for 1 year, he gets right back in there. The teams always play higher than they do, than they look on paper, just because how they're coached. And I'm excited to see them go forward, because I don't like Mac Jones, but I do
that's what I was going to say. That's the only thing holding me back.
It's so weird for me, Mac Jones. It's weird because he doesn't do anything special. Like, you see these young guys now, he's second year, for him to take a leap and see an area that they're really well in. And I just think he's like more of a manager at this team, for this team. Again, I still like Bailey Zappe. The guy looked he looks like he has a better arm, looks like he throws the ball down the field better, and they can stick with their scheme is ran. But if you want to go forward and try to make a push for the playoffs this year with in a really good division, you're a game out. Bailey Zappe, you know, he's probably not going to play, because that's just how it is.
Yeah.
You don't just switch your quarterbacks in and out. Like you said last week, got to pick one and stick with it.
Yeah.
They pick Mac Jones, are going to stick with it. But I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm not a big Mac Jones fan.
Neither am I.
I do want to see – I am a Patriots fan. I'm not a Patriots fan, but I do like Bill Belichick. I respect him. And it's just an old, you know, a beatdown, really. And I want to see them go forward and see how they play against division opponents. So – but we're going to move on to, let's go and run over to the Titans-Chiefs game, man. I want to run right there real quick before we hit anything else, before we wrap up, and before we go through our picks and stuff, and talk about this game. This is a rematch of an AFC divisional game, AFC championship, whatever it was, championship game, I think 2 years back, divisional game last year, I believe. And the Chiefs have gotten them twice. This year, they got them again, but there's something to be said. If the Chiefs are going to win games, which they do, and they do it at a high rate, they threw the ball 68 times. That's not sustainable. They're going to need some sort of running game. They have zero running game between CEH, Pacheco, and Jared McKinnon. They each had 3, 4, and 5 rushes respectively for a grand total of 14 yards. If you're going to have 14 yards on the ground and be one-dimensional. Again, this is one of the worst passing offenses also in the league, of giving up big plays to big guys. Then, you know, listen, good on them for taking advantage of somewhere where a team lacks, and you go out there and make it happen between Juju and Travis Kelce. They did a great job. Even Mecole Hardman had a great game. But goodness, man, that's too many throws, bro.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. For the Chiefs, you're lucky to sweep this one out. If Tannehill was in this game, you're not winning. For the Titans, I mean, they didn't even give Malik Willis a chance to throw the ball, and maybe that was a good plan.
Probably by design.
Going into Kansas City, you know, on a Sunday night. But you have to try something at some point. The offense was just, it was run or nothing. I mean, Malik Willis 5 of 16 for 80 yards. It's just not going to do it. And I understand that, you know, regardless of who is in there, their method to, you know, winning football games is the run. But all you have to do, if, you know, if this is how they're going to game plan, you know, their offense, is you just load the box. And you know what? You say, you know what? We're just going to throw a different linebacker or a different guy at Derrick Henry, you know, until we tire him out. Because we have, you know, Derrick Henry's one guy. We have a whole first, second, and third string, you know, of defenders that we could throw at him. Like, because there's no throwing, there's no passing threat in this game from Tennessee. I mean, you talked about Kansas City, so I wanted to touch on Tennessee a little bit more. The Titans, like, this was a game that they should have won this game. I mean, they, like, you know, and it would have been such a huge win for them on a Sunday night without Tannehill to go into Arrowhead and get this win. And I mean, Derrick Henry was a beast. The 2 touchdowns, 115 yards. just you have to at least every now and then try something.
Yeah, we talk about Derrick Henry every week. We know what Derrick Henry can do. Everyone knows what Derrick Henry does, and he's done it for a long time. Sorry to cut you off.
No,
but this is the only thing this team can do, and I don't know. There's nothing creative in it. No. Malik Willis, listen, I can't gauge him off the game. I can gauge him off of him throwing 5 completed passes in an entire game of football, with including an overtime period. Didn't let him try. 80 yards, and the time that he did try, and with it, I think it was when he got the ball back, which the Chiefs were not afraid to give him the ball back. They say, you know what? We'll score. We'll give you the ball back. I don't care about the time, and we'll go make it happen. And that's what they did. They gave Malik Willis a chance to get the ball back after, what was it? They gave him 3 minutes with a tie score, and they had no worries with just running out the clock, because they very well could have. Very well could have. Patrick Mahomes ran for 2 touchdowns. But Malik Willis and the Tennessee Titans here, he just looked like, again, there's nothing outside for him to throw to. I mean, you're throwing to Austin Hooper, who there's not many targets to go around, but he had 3 targets, 2 catches, 34 yards. Robert Woods is even in the game plan, and he's a guy you signed as a veteran guy to help this team out. Chris Conley's another veteran guy who's supposed to go in there and help out. And there's nothing to help Malik Willis grow as a quarterback. If you're gonna throw him in there, and you're gonna see this, what is the point of putting your quarterback out there, putting out your rookie, and just letting him look like an idiot?
Yeah,
he looks like a fool out there. It's like they don't care. It's like, go out there, Rook. You're gonna hand the ball off, and so be it. I had the announcers. If you watched, did you watch the Sunday night game? Did you watch game?
Parts of it, yes.
They were talking about how he held his arm out for extended. Like, that's all we're talking about. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about how he's holding his arm out behind the line of scrimmage to give Derrick Henry a better running. Like, come on. Like, this is what we're doing to the kid.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing. So this Vrabel, I like Vrabel. He's a good guy. He's an energy guy. He's a nice dude. But this has been your gameplay for 2 years, man. You're not going anywhere else. No. Figure it out.
Yeah, I agree.
You're NFL teams with, you know, they don't have weapons. I get it. They don't have weapons, but you got to utilize. You got to utilize what you have. If you're not going to utilize, or at least attempt to utilize, you're going to do the same thing. People are going to eventually catch on, and they did. I mean, stopping this team for whatever they did is fine. The Chiefs did a good job stopping the offense. The Tennessee Titans defense didn't do an awful job either, but it's just embarrassing, man. And you nailed it on the head. It's just you can't let Malik Willis go out there and throw the ball 16 times and expect to try to win a game. You got outpassed by 52 pass attempts, and you lost the game by 3 points. So that is more worrisome for me than the Chiefs. The Chiefs just do what they do, man. And I don't think it that sustainable. I don't think it will be. But the Chiefs find a way to do it. They switch it up every week. But you play a good all. You play a Jets. I'm interested to see this team play the Jets. I really am. I'm interested to see the Jets play the Kansas City Chiefs in MetLife for the fun of it, just to see. Because I want to see when push comes to shove, you're not going to be able to throw the ball 68 times to see what else they can get done. But we'll carry on for another time. Let's see. What else? Is there any other game you want to touch on real quick, man? Because we basically touched on everything that was semi, you know, important. We stayed away from the Chargers-Atlanta game. That was really nothing special there. I mean, welcome back, Cordell Patterson, but there's nothing else there. I mean, Cincinnati blew out Carolina. That was a 42-3 game before garbage time touchdowns got thrown in there.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk Joe Mixon if you want. He had 5 touchdowns.
But I don't think we really need to talk. We don't need to talk bringing about bringing up the 5 touchdowns.
Five touchdowns is a good feat.
Yeah. You want to touch on your Eagles a little bit?
We can talk
on
the Eagles a little bit. Yeah, we can talk on the Eagles for a tad. I don't really want to say much about the Eagles. But as for the Eagles, they're 8-0. They play a Texas team that is very bad. They're 1-6-1 now after the loss. I think for the Eagles here, they went down early, by the way. They went down 7-0 early against Houston. Their defense went right up and down the field. They couldn't tackle Damian Pierce, and they still couldn't. He had a fantastic game on the ground. He had 27 attempts, 139 yards. Didn't score a touchdown, which is what it is. But he ran down their throats. But again, you're going to win games when you just don't let anything else beat you. If you're going to say Damian Pierce is going to beat us, you take away everything else, which they do very well. James Bradbury has been very, very good for this team. Darius Slay as well. They've been 1A, 1B. I think, and I don't take PFF rankings to a high standard, but I saw PFF say like the top they're the top four cornerbacks. They're two of the top four cornerbacks in the league. And, you know, again, that's who you play. It's what it is. But Miles Sanders looked great against a really, really soft opponent. Jalen Hurts continues to impress. He, again, played another really good game, didn't turn over the ball, played a near-perfect game. And MVP talks, of course, are swirling now, and you're 8-0. And I think after the Josh Allen performance, he might be, right now, the leader of the MVP conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, my biggest takeaway from this game was Jalen Hurts. My problem, you know, and a lot of other people's problems coming into the year with Hurts was, you know, the inconsistency throwing the football. He's really starting to show that with the right scheme and with the right guys around him, he can really make it happen. And, you know, you just, I mean, again, yes, a weak opponent, but like you said, a clean, near-perfect game from him. You saw pretty much no mistakes.
Two fumbles, but...
Yes, you're right. But throwing the football, he looked, you know, there no mistakes, absolutely perfect. And I liked his comments after the game. You know, he's downplaying the undefeated, you know, season a little bit right now, which I think is the right approach. I think, you know, the way that you go about it is, you know, just getting up and going through, you know, the normal routine every week, you know, and not trying to make a big deal out of it. Because when you make a big deal out of it is when you're, you know, going to run into a situation where, you know, you're playing for the undefeated, you know, part
which
of the season.
Means, really means nothing.
Yeah.
And if you go undefeated.
Yeah, exactly.
But the playoffs come around, you get bounced. What is that? What is that? You're happy about the undefeated season? No.
Exactly. So I was really impressed by, you know, kind of what he, you know, said downplaying it, you know, saying that they haven't accomplished anything yet. I was impressed by that, and I was impressed by his performance. And, I mean, listen, with the team that Jalen Hurts has around him, if Jalen Hurts is going to put out these, you know, these kind of clean performances and we're going to, you know, see him evolve as a passer, the Eagles are legit and what they are looking like they are right now.
Yeah, and another thing with Jalen Hurts is watching him grow as an Eagles fan year after year. The year that he gets drafted with the Carson Wentz being the backup, there was comments at the end of the year when he got thrown in a situation to basically tank the last game of the year. And there was things about him as a player and a competitor wanting to, you know, fight back or wanting to not throw a game away, which, of course, no one ever throw a game away. And I'm sure you go out there, you play football, but you throw him out in the reins, and maybe that takes a toll on his mental, but he comes back to last year, 2021, takes leaps with maturity, with his leadership, and running the football, and you see the struggles passing-wise, and that's a big thing that everyone talks about for the rest of the season and the offseason. Goes into camp this season, fixes those problems. I think the biggest thing with Jalen Hurts is the leaps that he's taken year after year. They're giant leaps in just how he's a quarterback, as a competitor, as a guy that's just dedicated to the craft and dedicated to the game. He's been a real great leader for this team, a young kid too, to basically, like you said with the comments, just keeping everything on a low and just taking care of business and moving on. And that's the only thing they worry about. I know there's players, and I'm sure it comes up in the locker rooms all the time, and questions by the media, like, hey, so you're 9-0. I mean, how far do you think this can go? And you don't worry about that.
Yeah.
You don't worry about that. And I'm very happy that what he's turned into, to be able to basically just silence all that and to tune it out and to continue to play each week, and that's all you can take care of. A loss a week, a win every week, doesn't matter. You got to just stay ahead of the grind, and it's really exciting and fun to watch him grow as a person, because he's it's something, man. I don't know, because we went from Carson Wentz, who apparently was fighting in the locker room, and you had a lot of up and down. You were firing Doug Peterson when people thought it was premature. You bring Nick Sirianni in here and change the whole philosophy of the team. And ever since that, the Eagles have been on the up and up. And I don't know. I mean, you know, they're 8-0. The schedule is very soft, so I expect them to win more games. I expect their division games to be very, very big games, because everyone in that division is playing pretty well. So we'll see what the future holds for the Eagles. But they do look very good, and I think they're deserving of a number one spot right now.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, on people's power rankings behind, I don't know, Chiefs, Bills, you name it. But that's really it, man. Off scores, why NFL, you know, this week, there's nothing else to talk about here. I mean, every team, there were some games that we absolutely touched on and we need to touch on, like, again, the Buffalo game, that game was a big one. The Jacksonville Raiders game, even Green Bay. But it was a fun week of football, Boston. I think it's time to move over to our picks for this week, man. And I do have to say, I am totally at fault for losing my Survivor Week 2, picking the Bills to beat the Jets and not taking the homeboys and the Eagles, which will look like the easy one to take. So that's on me. That's bad. So I'm basically bounced out of the Survivor pool. I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm just done.
Listen, man.
I got to see how far you go.
I can't. I guess I'll start. I'll just throw my Survivor out.
Yeah,
now,
give me the
then,
Survivor pick for you, man. Let me hear it, dude.
Just because, you know, it's just me.
Goodness.
I'm going to take the Giants at home against the Texans coming off a bye. Texans aren't very good. The Giants have looked really, you know, really solid. Coming off a bye, they're going to be rested. Giants will be the Survivor pick this week.
It's a solid pick, man. I'm really happy. That's a solid pick. That's a good one. I expect them to win 100%. So.
All right, man. So we're doing, you know, what do we do? Two each?
We're going to do two each. We're going to do the same thing.
So I'm going to throw one at you.
Hey, let's hear it.
Seattle Seahawks traveling to Tampa Bay to take on the Buccaneers in Tampa. I know you've been.
Is it in Tampa? It's 9:30 a.m.
Oh.
I think this is the Madrid game.
You might be right. I didn't even realize.
Is it Madrid? Is that what it is?
Let me take a look.
Or is it back in London? This is a Madrid game.
It's in Munich.
Oh. Okay, Munich. Interesting. Wow. Overseas time. What do I think? Nah, I can't buy it. All right, Seahawks.
All right.
Seattle.
Okay.
Seattle and Munich.
Listen, to be honest with you, I don't hate it. Seattle's given us, you know.
With how their team's playing, with what their defense looks like, and what, like, kind of the mojo they got going, I think they take care of a Buccaneers team that's still, like, finding themselves. And they got a win last week, and, I mean, good win for them, I guess. But it was nothing special, so yeah. I'm thinking Seattle.
All right, man.
Another one. Let me hear it.
Cowboys in Lambeau.
Cowboys in Lambeau.
You think Green Bay figures it out a little bit, or is Michael Parsons going to roll to the finish?
This is actually a tough game because the season's on the line for the Green Bay Packers, and it's tough to see a playoff game, you know, playoffs without Green Bay now, especially with an extra team in there.
Yep.
This season, I think I'm going to take Green Bay at home to defeat the Dallas Cowboys with Dak Prescott back under the helm.
Ooh, man.
For the second week. I don't know. I'm pretty confident in it, too. I actually think Green Bay will figure it out. Is this a 425 game?
It's 425.
I like it. That's a good second window game. Is good. I don't want a 1 o'clock game for this game. I want to be able to watch this solely and get this on the big screen because this is definitely a big game. So that's my pick for that game for sure. So there's my two. So Seahawks and the Packers. A little bit different than, you know, I went with Denver and Washington, the two dogs that they won, but you know what? Hey. Let's move over, man. Let's see. I got you a game, I think. I think we're gonna get you a nice game here. Let's do Interesting. Alright. Broncos Titans. In Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Titans. Hmm. Whether it's Malik Willis or whether it's Ryan Tannehill. Denver's got to show me something. I'm not going to bet on them anymore until they show me something. Tennessee did a tremendous job of getting after Patrick Mahomes on Sunday.
They did.
If they're able to do that to Russell Wilson, I think it's going to be a really long day for the Broncos offense. And obviously King Henry is going to run over any single defense that he's going to play. So give me the Titans at home.
Only reason I picked that is I think Titans are the best defense they're going to see. And I wonder, Ryan Tannehill going to be back throwing the football next week?
I actually don't know for sure, but it really doesn't change my pick. I really think even if they went in with the same game plan as they did in Kansas City where Malik doesn't touch the ball at all, I still think Denver's offense hasn't looked very good, you know, in the past couple of weeks. And Russ seems to melt when there's a lot of pressure in his face, so I'm gonna roll with that.
Fair enough. That's fair enough, man. Wow. Let's see. Chargers Niners Sunday Night Football.
I'm going to take the Niners at home. They're going to be able to run the football.
Yeah, very well.
With ease, you know, against the Chargers. The Chargers haven't looked like what we really thought they were going to be. Obviously, Austin Eckler's had a great year, but they've been banged up in the receiving core. Herbert hasn't been, you know, as sharp as we, you know, would have liked to see. And I think San Francisco is a really tough place to play. I think we've seen that the last couple of years with, you know, the games that, you know, the Rams have, you know, gone into San Francisco and pretty much been handled, you know, fairly easily. And I think that's a really tough place to play. I took Seattle a couple weeks ago against the Giants because I liked, you know, how it's hard to play in Seattle. I'm going to do the same thing here. I think it's hard to play in San Francisco. McCaffrey, I think, is going to roll. Give me the Niners.
Now let's we're gonna throw it back a little bit here. The last five matchups between these teams haven't matched up since 2018. First off, that's a big long one. The last matchup they had, we had the Chargers come on top. 2014, San Diego came on top. 2010, San Diego came on top. 2006, San Diego came on top. And 2002, San Diego came on top.
Wow.
So that's interesting. The Niners are due. And blowout form and fashion too. Let me add. Yeah, Niners are due. And I probably agree with that pick as well. The Niners, Chris McCaffrey should run through the Chargers.
Yeah, to honestly, as crazy as it sounds, to keep pace with Seattle right now, this is a game they kind of need to win.
Yeah, so. It's insane to say.
It's crazy to say, but, yeah, it's a big game right. for them. So I think you're at right. home they'll get it done.
Absolutely, man. Well, anything else you want to add? Anything else you want to see? Maybe like just storylines going in next week. You want to see what teams bounce back or something you want to get into? Or you think we're going to wrap it up?
Yeah, just one more thing. Cardinals-Rams, I want to see one of those teams show up. I don't know who it's going to be, nor do I really care. I just want to see one of them show up. They've both been disappointing.
Yeah,
it's a divisional game. I want to see either the Rams start to turn around or the Cardinals start to turn around. Again, don't really matter who it is, but I don't want that to be another 425 dud. So.
Yeah, which makes it even more enticing for Green Bay to play Dallas. Because if that's a dud, we'll move right on. We'll murder into there. And We'll put the parlay together once again this week. We'll win this one, too, because I won't blow it.
See what happens, man.
We'll see what happens. I have one less pick to give you to blow it, so that's always good. So I appreciate everyone for listening. Again, another fun week of football. Lots to talk about. Lots of things next week. So now we're starting to see the nitty-gritty of what these teams are really like and into the flow in the second half of the NFL season, which is insane that we're in week 9, that we're going into week 10 already. It feels like, you know, it just started. I remember waking up not too long ago for the first football Sunday, being hyped up. But we're halfway through, and that's also exciting because teams are starting to really show themselves in bad and good ways, and football is starting to get more competitive each week, which is good. So until then, I appreciate everyone for listening. Thank you very much for all the new – I had a couple – comments on my Twitter, actually, which is very good to see that people were watching and following and actually had a comment to I had a reply to on Twitter, which is good. My Twitter will be linked in the Anchor app underneath this when it pops up. So I hope to hear from more of you guys lately. I'll throw your Twitter in there as well if you have a Twitter, if you want me to throw that in there for you, and might as well see if something else happens. But I appreciate that. So until next time, again, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you in week 10.